Well, Darcy, okay. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate you doing this.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk to you about your book, Red Cape Rescue. Believe it or not, I actually read it. But
I am so excited to hear that. What you have in front of you is like the author's dream. Let me just tell you, for anybody who's aspiring to write a book out there who has like a book that's marked up, that's, you know, dog-eared, you know, we don't want you to keep our books pristine. We want you to read them and use them. So yeah. Thank you for doing that.
No problem.
It.
Well, it's a real toolkit, you know, for going through this stuff because, and I ended up writing in the book. I ended up... rewriting on all the end of the chapter assignment things and spilled over to the notebook. So no, this was super helpful. I got to be honest, I didn't finish it because I just had a baby last week.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So
boy, girl,
a girl.
Oh
yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
And so I didn't finish it because I had a baby, but I didn't write the review because I'm lazy. So I'm putting that on the record. So that way I'll have to go back and do that.
Okay. All right.
Before.
So before the, you know, baby's 3 months and we'll, you know,
exactly.
take 2 minutes and write a review.
And finish the review. So I got up to part three, Reinvent What You Do. But I kind of want to dive into some of the stuff that you wrote in the beginning pieces because it was actually very helpful. And I'm coming from it from a different perspective. I left my job and started something new. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is that the advice and the thoughts in here really are relevant regardless if you stay, if you go and start something new. I think it seemed to me like the beginning part was, hey, before you pull the emergency cord.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, really led me to write the book in many ways.
I was going
to
ask you about that. So what prompted this?
So I've heard from, you know, a lot of smart professionals like you, you know, you're working in good companies doing great things. But then, you know, in my world as a coach, people would come to me and they'd be like, yeah, well, something's just not quite right. And what I found often is that the conventional wisdom would be telling them, well, when something's not right, you just go find another job, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just leave. I mean, don't stay there. Don't stay stuck. And in some cases, that's absolutely the right thing to do. I don't want anybody to get misled by the title that says save your career without leaving your job. Some cases it's the right thing, but in many cases, that thing that was not quite right is fixable, changeable, adaptable.
Yeah.
And so the book really talks about some of the ways you can do that, because what I'd also found is that a lot of people, they kind of were feeling the pressure that everybody says, well, you're not happy, go find another job. But that's exhausting. That takes a lot. And it takes a lot of courage. You know, it takes a lot. And
a lot of logistics too, because if you end up making that switch, there's so much that you have to take into account.
Yeah.
Health insurance.
Right.
Is this actually as secure as I thought? Right. Is this company that I'm moving to as secure as I thought?
Right.
Is the business I'm starting as much of a sure thing as I thought?
Uh-huh.
You know, like.
Sounds like there's some thought bubbles in your head.
These thoughts have never occurred to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, welcome to the human race. You know, this is what happens with all of us. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, part one of the book is really around how you think. Because to your point, whether you've already left and you're doing something new or you're really trying to process through recognizing the things we control and how we think is no one teaches us that. You know, we get focused on the do, right? You know, go find the good job, do the good work. But we have so much control over the way we think, but we don't really learn it until later in life if we learn it at all.
Well, and one of the things that you have in here, and I have, it's almost like a recurring theme, so I don't even know where to start with this, but part of it is really that the inner voice and the way that you talk to yourself. So some of the stuff that you have in here, I think maybe this is rewrite your story, so kind of jumping to the end, but it really ties into the beginning, is like shifting the way that you think about things and the way that you talk to yourself and looking at the types of words that you use. I kind of had this epiphany about this stuff maybe a year and a half ago, And I really took inventory of the way that I talked to myself. And you when I reread it here, I was like, thank you for the reminder, because it's so destructive to twist the way that you talk to yourself. Like, a lot of it was like, basically it sums up, you're a piece of shit. Like, at the end of the day, you know, it's like, that's what it keeps coming back to. And then you really got to break it down, because if you don't break out of that, it's so destructive. It's so counterproductive. It seems like the thing you should do, but when you do it, you fall further and further behind. Then you end up in that woe is me kind of phase.
Right. I call that the spiral. And, you know, there's so many people that get trapped in that spiral. And that voice, you know, that voice wants to win inside our head, you know, but it's just trying to keep us safe. You know, I use Seth Godin's term, the lizard brain. You know, I refer to it as the lizard brain, where it's that prehistoric part of our brain that we don't realize every single person on the planet has this. It's intended to keep us safe. That's its biological reason. But in the modern world, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. What it does to us is say, yeah, Chris, you're a piece of crap, or you're not good enough for this, or you're broken, or you're not, you know, or you're too this, or you're too that. And when we don't recognize that voice is not us, in the book I talk about that, you know, your brain lies, that voice is, we think that voice is keeping us in, you know, it's like, oh, don't get too big for your britches, or hold yourself back. But it's really keeping us down, and also keeps us from moving forward, because it creates all these negative emotions and fear. And really, the science is that it stimulates fight or flight. It stimulates hormones in your body. It's actually physical.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The when that brain part of the brain gets triggered, it releases hormones that, so, you know, your feelings are legitimate, and they're actually showing you, you know, they keep you from doing things, keep you from trying something new or saying something, speaking up. So it's really a principle that I wish we taught and talked about more.
Sure.
Because we have to find tools to overcome it.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you say that. I just brought back the sales book that I listened to one time. It was about cold calling and things like that. And he's like, yeah, most people will tell you just, you know, suck it up. And they're like, it's not just water off your back. Like, you literally go into these things with all of this neurochemistry and this wiring that says, like, all of these things before you even dial, and all these
stranger
things.
Stranger danger, you know, it's like, you know, this is going to harm me. Yeah. And there is biology in this. And so it's not just you, it's not, you're not strong enough, or you're not tough enough. It's just part of how we're built, but we can overcome that.
Yeah. Well, and part of what I've realized over the past year and a half with some of the stuff you just mentioned, it's not you. Like, you are not your thoughts. This is somewhat of an outside force. You called it the judge at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if have you ever read the book The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield?
I love Pressfield. Oh, yeah.
That was one of the biggest, most helpful books I've ever read, because it talks about resistance as something outside of yourself that is throwing all of these wrenches in your works, all of these things that seed the self-doubt and all this stuff. It kind of comes in very unexpected ways. Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't think to do is, like, personify it, like you talked about. So a couple things. When did you was there a point that you realized that this is like an external voice? Like, distinctly remember that?
So in my own journey of what I consider my career rescue of trying to realize what was next for me, I did what everybody else tells you to do, right? I was working for a large consulting firm. The next job up was going to be my boss's job. And then suddenly she announced she was retiring and I wasn't getting that job. Someone else was. And so you think, well, I guess, and I still had a job, but it's like, well, I guess if I want to grow, I need to go somewhere else. And as I did that, I kept coming back to the jobs that I was getting offered were very similar to what I was already doing.
Sure.
And so I realized, well, so why wasn't I excited about that? Why wasn't that the rescue that I wanted? Why wasn't that the change that I needed?
This is the thing everyone says you're supposed to have. This is what you told yourself a million times.
Exactly what you told yourself a million times, what your family tells you, what your friends tell you. Yeah, just go find the new job, get the bigger job, make more money or have different status. But it kept feeling like just the circle. And I think it's one of the places where I hired my first coach. And it was totally unplanned, totally random. There's only the path looking back. We don't know the path looking forward, right? So the fact that I'm a coach now I guess I could give some credit to that, but they're somewhat unconnected. But I think that slowing down and taking the beat that when you work with someone external to you helps start to your question started me recognizing that, I am not fully my thoughts. That I often say, you can't see the label from out inside the jar. You know, that inside the jar, it was, I'm not good enough for the next job. Maybe I won't be good enough for the new job. You know, what do I really want?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not good enough anyway. All the things that we get ourselves trapped in doing.
Sure.
And so I think then was starting the path. But I'll be honest, Chris, this is work that I do and clients and people, we do every single day because that little lizard brain is strong. You know, it wants to say, don't go to that thing, go hide, or you're tired or,
The squirm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's so very real.
Yeah. So being able to affirm the squirm, as I say in one of the chapters. So, but yeah, I think that's, and then like you're doing, I started picking up different types of books. You know, War of Art was, introduced to me. Seth Godin's work talks a lot about picking yourself and not waiting to be picked.
Sure.
And, there's a lot of folks who have done some great work in that area. And even you mentioned naming that little part of the brain, personifying it. That comes from the work of a gentleman named Shirzad Shamin in the book's Positive Intelligence. And he is a Stanford professor and really does some really interesting work about identifying, that judge in your brain and even breaking it down more like, is it a pleaser? Is it like the hypervigilant, like watching for everything? So those are other books that I really recommend. And there's some great tools in there to help even go deeper than kind of what I've shared in the book.
Like different flavors of the judge,
exactly.
Basically.
Yes, different flavors. Right, because some of us, some of us, our judge is because
you're working too hard.
Yeah.
Or somebody else might be like, I don't understand that. My judge says, you're not working hard enough.
Yeah.
But at the same, at the end of the day, it's kind of that same force that is steering you off your path. Mm-hmm. Well, and so I have a question on this section, but if you could, can you, because I had like a bit of a realization with this and it tied into my business, but can you go over kind of this first chapter of Know Your Core Powers, like why you started the book off with this? Is this the first? This is the first chapter,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So can you go over like why you started with this, what you mean by it, and because this helped me a lot, especially this little action plan thing at the end.
Uh-huh. Well, again, we all forget how much power we actually have. And that's not, just happy talk, right? That's not, you're more powerful than you think. There's, back to science, we only control three things. We control everything we think, everything we say, and everything we do.
Yep.
And that's it.
That's it.
And yet, smart professionals who want to have great careers, great lives, and I'll put myself in that category, we strive to control so many other things.
I do it all the time. I got to do this and I got to do this so I can make the money. And then I have to change this on the website. And if I do that, then all these will happen.
Yeah. And so we can influence things, right? If you stayed in bed all day and played video games, that's going to have a different outcome than when you're working on the website or doing a podcast or calling a client, right? But But the fact is that all we can control is those three things in us. And we can't control the outcome. We can't control that, okay, I'm going to make the sales call. I can't control whether she's going to be ticked off or excited. Yeah. I can't control that. I can influence it by having some strategies and tools, but that's not about me.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm doing what I can do, or I'm thinking the way that I need to think. And so we start with that in the book, you know, as a true, you know, a core power that every one of us have. And of course, you know, you mentioned the title of the book, Red Cape Rescue. And, you know, my analogy there, which I use in my business, is always that remembering when you were a kid and you had a towel or a sheet and you threw it around your shoulders and you felt confident, you felt in control. And what if you could feel that way every single day?
Yeah.
And feel that way at work?
Yeah.
Which often feels out of control.
Sure.
And, you know, I think this was magnified for me through the lens of people that I work with and people who read what I write during the pandemic, where a lot of people were saying to me, I just feel out of control. But you never lost control over those three things. We just forget that that's all we can control.
Yeah. Well, and a big part of it too is bringing that kind of the red cape kind of feeling to your work and to those things. Because what I've noticed, I don't know if you have this or anybody listening has this, but like whatever that version is for you, whether that for me, that's like playing music. And sometimes like I can envision being on the stage and playing and doing all that stuff. That would be maybe the equivalent of my, you know, cape, right? Uh-huh. But you can have those thoughts, and those thoughts for me might be the strongest on a Friday night or a Saturday night or a Sunday morning, you know, at 2 a.m. or, you know, 9 a.m. on a Sunday, whatever it might be, when you've got that distance from work and you're like, oh yeah, if I do this, I can make this lead generation tool. And if I put these things out, I can do that. And then you kind of hit the office on Monday and you hit work and all of these fucking doubts just come right back in and like obscure it. So it was interesting the way that you put it there, because it's like trying to bring that same mindset to your actual work, mm-hmm. not just when you have that distance, right?
Right, right. Well, and the whole idea of personifying that negative voice in your brain is so that at 3 a.m, when you're hearing, you know, some of those like, oh, you're not going to be able to do this, or the Monday morning when your list looks super long, right? And you're like, how did I think that all these things were, you know, and then you start to say, what a loser am I? I'm not a good planner. Why should I be doing this business in the first place? And it's really interesting. The brain actually, there's some data on how fast the brain calculates. And there's a great book from Ethan Cross called Chatter, where he talks about what the brain can talk to you at a speed of like 6 State like, of the Union addresses in an hour or something. It's just, it's fascinating. But we all know that, right? Because it happens, and we just, those thoughts come, and then you get stuck. And then you're like, Monday morning, you're like, what am I doing? Why should I do this? But if you talk back to that, if you, you know, you give it a name and say, okay, Mr. Jones, you go back into your cave. I got this. I know the first thing I need to do today. And it's just a little way to kind of make yourself smile, but to also actively separate that from the you that wants the business you want, the you that wants to be the person who, you know, yeah, I'm going to reach out to that client because you know what? They might need me right now. They might need what I have. Not in fear, but in positivity.
That is literally what I got from this, is especially as you start a business, but I did this when I was in sales before, mm-hmm. you assume that they don't want what you've got,
right?
Especially sales, like these beginning phases, all this stuff, like they don't want this, right? Like you apply your own biases, your own prejudices to this situation. Like, I wouldn't want somebody calling me to do a podcast production. I'm like, I already have the podcast production. And I'm like, dummy. Like, you, this is what your business is. And then you talk to people, and it really never turns out how you think it is, and it never comes in the form you think. But by knowing, you know, your core powers in this case, one of the things I wrote was you actually can start to see and understand where your value lies. So rather than starting off that phone call from a place of they're not going to want this because I really don't know what value this brings, I'm like, let me regroup to start. I know I can deliver X, Y, and Z for my current customers. And if I even deliver more for them, I'll know that much more. And when I call new people, I'll have that much more information to share with them, and I can grow the business. Mm-hmm. And just by starting with that simple thing of understanding what value you bring to the table, it really gives you an edge over, you know, resistance, over the judge, whatever term you want to call it. That has been very helpful. This is a great reminder of that. And I'm glad I read that chapter the day I did, because I had a sales call later that day.
Uh-huh. Did it work?
It reframed my yes. thinking big time. So great. So thank you for the help with the sales
pitch. Well, you're welcome. And I can't wait to get to the end, but I'll give you a sneak peek, because one of the things that it's a mantra for me, but I've offered it to a lot of different people, because I do think that it is helpful to stay into that heroic brain and not the little, you know, lizard brain, the brain we need to talk back to. It is remembering that somebody out there needs me.
Yes.
And when we use the term somebody out there needs me, it helps a whole lot to do the things that we know are the right things to do, whether that's in our job, in our life, or what have you. Because then, instead of, I'm making the sales call and maybe they don't want this, it's like, you know what? They might have some problems and pain that I'm uniquely set up to solve.
Yeah.
And by introducing myself to them and getting to know them, you know, I could be the solution that they might not even know existed. So, you know, again, all you can control is how you approach it. And, you know, and certainly you can do research, you can ask good questions, you can do all the things in a sales call that work, you know, but ultimately then, if it's not a match for them, it's not about you. That's like, great, terrific, you know. Next. And I think it's the same way for people that might be looking for a job in a traditional way.
Sure.
That it's really easy to think, and partly because our systems are broken and we don't need to go there. Well, we can go there if you want, but the systems, systems are crap right now.
Oh, yeah.
But people get really discouraged because the system is not set up to even give you any feedback or validation. But how do you keep going? How do you not get caught in that lizard brain of thinking, well, because I haven't heard back, then it must be about me. I must be broken. I must be lost. I'm too old. I'm too young, whatever it is. But when you remind yourself, somebody out there needs me, and it's my job, you know, to just keep putting myself out there. Visibility equals viability. My job is to keep sharing, because if I don't, then somebody who eventually needs me
won't find me
and might have to go without whatever the gifts that I bring. So this is a different perspective, and it's a good perspective. You talk about sales calls, because you know, people buy according to the trust and also the pain that you solve and what you're selling. So
yeah, and it comes in all jobs, whether you're in, you know, client success or customer success, where it's like, oh, I'm not really an expert in the thing. It's like, no, you're there to help. But so that's actually a critical piece of this kind of puzzle, I think, is having that mindset of someone out there needs me. For you, where does that come from for you? Is that like what kind of belief drives that for you?
I think it probably comes from experience of recognizing that there are times when you can't predict in your outcome who's going to benefit or what's the ripple effect of anything that you do. you know, very often we just kind of see our own little circle.
Sure.
In what I do as a coach, I probably have more benefit than some to know that whatever ripple that I'm creating in someone else's life has
many ripples.
Has effect on other people. You know, if I'm working with a leader, then and they're working on some specific behaviors, maybe be a stronger communicator with their team, maybe sorting through themselves as to what they want to do next and how they want to grow, because our leaders are human too and have their issues too.
Sure.
That those choices, whatever that person says or does, has an effect on other people. And those people, you know, we all have lives, we all have families, we all have people that love us. And so I think recognizing that if I didn't, let's go back to sales, if I didn't follow up with a inquiry, you know, someone comes through my website or someone introduces me to somebody, if I didn't follow up, if I didn't do what I can control, which is stay on top of it, then, you know, they might miss out on whatever the broader ripple of what could happen.
Sure.
Now, you know, they still are 100% in charge of whether someone hires me or whether someone hires someone else or doesn't do anything at all. But if I'm not doing what I can do to be of help, then that's my miss.
Got it. So it comes from that experience of seeing this kind of happen maybe over and over again, and maybe just is it almost, did it become like pattern recognition?
It's a good question. Probably. I think there's also an element of trust and learning how to trust in yourself.
Okay.
That and I know there's a lot of people who have been taught not to trust in themselves. That's partly what the judge is all about, right? The judge is trying to convince you that you're not good enough, that you're not ready yet. But there's a piece as to where I think we have to practice that trusting in ourselves. And probably for me, when I started my own business, you know, it probably took a while, it's pattern recognition. It takes repeated opportunities and repeated times when you do something and the outcome isn't what you want.
Definitely.
And that happens to everybody, right?
That's like 80 or 90% of the time,
Right.
But it's never, it doesn't seem to be, as long as you're doing things in good faith, it seems like it's never as bad as you thought it was going to be.
Right.
But you don't get it right almost ever.
No. Well, and the thing is, it's all made up, you know, Chris. Everything in work is all made up. Mm-hmm. Even in the most staid, structured corporate organization, those jobs and roles, you know, they're made up every single day. I mean, the same person who does, let's take a role like a sales manager. Sales manager in one part of the company and sales manager in another part of the company, they might have some things in common, but they're doing different things because they're different people.
Yeah.
And they have different problems that come up. And so we get trapped in thinking that, you know, work is all structured. It's not. It's all organic. It's all made up. So to me, part of that ongoing learning is recognizing, how do I make up what I'm doing in a way that works for me?
Yeah.
And that's back to the powers of knowing, here's what I control. So maybe I need to do something differently or say something differently or even think something differently.
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple. All right. This is why I'm excited to talk about this, because it makes my brain go in 15 different directions. But I think the cool part about the experience side that you're mentioning is if you can get your mind thinking the right way about some of this stuff, you can avoid the cynicism that comes with experience and turn it into more authenticity. Because I think what happened for me growing up, getting into my mid-teens to early 20s, I became very cynical. Mm-hmm. Not like, I was a bit of a prick, but I was...
Hey, your brother's in the other room, isn't he? We can go ask him. Yeah.
Well, he was too. You know what? There, I take it back. I was perfectly fine.
Okay, you're probably perfect, yeah.
Uh-huh. No, but I was. And part of it came to cynicism. And One of the things that I was reading, and it kind of like slapped me right in the face towards the end of this, is kind of those like woe is me statements of how you phrase something. Because one of the things I noticed was common theme with them, and something I started doing maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that, is looking at the way you think about these things of experience, like, I've been screwed over before, or this doesn't work, or blah, blah, blah. But if you stop the sentence in your mind there, like, that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, you literally, you cut yourself off at the knees. If you change the way that you think about that to, I've tried that and it didn't work, but I know that I learned this from it. It's almost like you give yourself a mental pathway through to start like solving problems and start getting past this like woe is me cynicism bullshit, right? Because I think a lot of people get there because it's a natural part of a journey for somebody that thinks, that wants to do better, that feels like they have power and control. But like you said, it's like everything's made up. You're not going to get it right. And if you stay there, man, that'll just eat you alive.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, I worry about, because I do think we have lots of people in our world who, you know, that is eating them alive. And there's a Wayne Dyer phrase that I love that I hope I don't botch it. It's, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yes.
And when you look at the world through the lens of negative emotion, the negative, like, that's for crap. I got screwed again. No one's going to hire me. No one's going to promote me. You know, all of those things that put you in a victim mode, put you in a one down mode. Negative emotion in general pulls us back. And, you know, in the workplace, we don't often talk about emotion. We think, well, it's not personal, it's just work. But I call bullshit on that, because it's all personal, because it's human beings and we are built for emotion. You know, an emotion puts us in motion. So when we can shift to the point you were making, from when we can recognize that we are speaking words or thinking thoughts of negative emotion, that's pulling us back, that's keeping us on the couch instead of making a phone call to a friend or going out to a networking meeting or going to the interview I scheduled instead of ghosting, you know, the employer because I'm just having a bad day, right? Yeah. Just like saying, you know what? I might not do my best today, but you know what? This is a commitment I made. I'm just going to show up and see what happens. Because I control that, right? I can't control what the employer is going to do. I can't control if I'm getting hired or not, but I can control showing up. But when we put ourselves in positive emotion, that moves us forward.
Yeah.
It's the negative emotions that hold us back. And there's a lot of really interesting research right now about what's called toxic positivity. So I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about fake it till you make it, or kind of, you know, Instagram or, you know, worthy, like,
filter over your life.
Right. Yeah. Right. But you can be real about it. But like, to your point, you can say, hey, this business is hard. You know, it's hard starting a new business. But instead of saying, ah,
small
business is hard. You know, it sucks. The world's structured against me. Can say, you know what? I'm learning. You know what? Things are not easy right now, but I've got some plans. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah.
And it's the same situation. You know, one of the stories I mentioned in the book is, I don't know if you ever did those magic eye pictures when you were a kid. Maybe you're too young for that. You know, it looks just like a bunch of colored dots, like, and you have to stare at it for a long time. And then when you stare at it, suddenly you'll see that instead of just a bunch of dots,
like forms an image.
Yeah,
or something.
It's like a pool of sharks. And the truth is, look, go Google magic eye later. And it could be a number of things. It's a whole art form, actually. There he goes. He's going to write it down. But the truth is that in that picture, the sharks were always there, but you didn't see them at first. I think that's a lot of times with ourselves, is that you talked about the chapter called Rewrite Your Story. Yes, it might be hard right now. Yes, I might be not loving my job, or yes, I might not have the same skills or opportunity that somebody else has. And, not but, but and, there might be something else I'm not seeing. You know, could I see that, okay, this is a learning opportunity for me. This is an opportunity for me to take a step back, ask bigger questions, or an opportunity for me to make a right turn or do something different. I mean, or knuckle down and say, hey, how do I ask for more of what I need in the job that I'm in?
Sure.
So we just have to recognize that if we're kind of in that negative trap, that there are some ways that we can just, you know, in an instant switch our thoughts, which also the emotions do trigger. When we can change our thought, you know, that triggers feelings, and then that triggers us feeling like, yeah, we could take action.
Yeah. Well, and if you can, I like this book because it gives you one path of being able to change your thoughts, because it's kind of that higher level. Let me grab you by the shoulders and pull you out of the minutia of the day and think about this in a different way, like your values. Oh man, narrowing down my values to the four values.
Was it hard?
Yeah, it was super difficult.
Did it surprise you what you found?
Yes, it was. I was like, shit. All right. I was like, well played, Darcy.
It's not a gotcha game.
But no, but it was very helpful because it made me go like, it made me start to think of what things you can control, what's really important to you. You can eat the world, but you got to do it one bite at a time. And maybe these values are going to conflict, and maybe this one's not as important. It's still important, but this is more important. And you can start to prioritize your days and things like that. I forget what my point was, but oh, okay. So this was great because it kind of pulls you out of that. And then I think part of the ability to change your mind and your things like that, what I've found success with is creating this kind of consistency in other like daily routines, whether it's the thing that you eat in the morning. I stopped drinking coffee and I switched to this stuff called Magic Mind, and like these different like mushroom things. So like attacking the kind of daily anxiety stuff that you deal with slightly differently. Mm-hmm. And then I interviewed a guy named Pete, and he talked to me about this thing called BMAP. It's like behavior equals motivation, ability, and prompt. Mm-hmm. So like setting up your calendar to tell you what to do. So like having started to do that and then combining this was great because I was able to actually, you can do it in two parallel paths of like the very practical and also that mental side that a lot of people don't talk about. Like you said, it's not personal. This is just business, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You should just wake up and love everything. It's like, it just doesn't work. So it's like physically setting yourself up for that and mentally. But you mentioned the positive mindset and this kind of stuff. Where do you see this coming into play with like the Great Resignation and people leaving their jobs or staying? Because for me, one of the reasons why I left my job, and it's really not anything against the last company, it's more like I watched during COVID the entire our government shut down our entire country, basically. We were able to tell small businesses that they couldn't operate and these big companies could. The government just can go just print almost double the amount of money in circulation. And it's just all of a sudden you look at these things and you're like, what is leadership? Who's running this thing? What is any of this stuff? Like it was such a big realization of like, man, we have given away all of our power, all of our like self-sovereignty, all of our ability to like run our own lives. And I want to take that back. But before that, I was stuck in the negative. So That's just a ramblings of maybe a madman, and I don't know what the question is, but maybe you can shed some light on this.
So many interesting things in what you're saying. So, which I think goes back to one of the points that we were talking about in the book about what you control. So you asked like about the Great Resignation. So, you know, the data is kind of all over the place on this. I mean, some of it is it magnified because of kind of the intensive pause? And a lot of this is, you know, if we had seen it across 2-3 years, would it be as dramatic as it is? Is some of it coming out of, and I do believe it's true, that we've created a moment, you know, a worldwide moment of reflection of people coming to different realizations, maybe looking harder at their values, maybe sure. not, you know, doing the exercise like we have in the book, but really thinking about what does life really mean? You know, when you think I could go outside and in a moment's notice, I could die at any time, which is kind of how we thought at the beginning of the pandemic, sure. right? You know, you stop and you say, what's important to me? And what's important to me gets smaller really fast. And it gets smaller really fast because that is what we can control. You know, and the brain, humans, we crave control. The skin, it all goes back many ways to the brain. So when something is feeling out of control at work, it feels easier, I think, sometimes, especially in a very fast-paced job market, or I guess I'll say hot job market. It's not really as fast as you'd think it is. I think the average time to find a new job is now tracking at 26 weeks, which is like half a year. You know, it's not fast, right? Now, that's an average. So,
sure.
You know, your mileage may vary, right?
30 interviews to get a $60,000 job.
That's a whole other conversation and a presentation and a song and dance. So,
let me start up a small business in that time, and I could probably make that money in the amount of time that it'll take me to do these interviews.
Yes. So, but feeling like, well, leaving my job, something's not working. And we make a bunch of assumptions, too. I've had several conversations with people through my insider community where I write every week
sure.
or through, you know, clients or other people where they've said, at my company, they've said they can't do X. And sure. my question always is, who is they and what conversations have you had? And most of the time it's like, well, our leaders have said we're all going back to the office. And I will tell you, and I will tell your listeners, and I will tell you a dirty little secret that's probably not that dirty and not so secret anymore, is that people are making exceptions all the time. You know, our leaders are human too, right? Whether that be government or companies or what have you. And when they make blanket statements, everybody isn't doing everything that's a blanket statement.
Sure.
So if your company says, we're all going back to the office, and you're someone that for your work or for your life, you need to be in more of a hybrid mode or you want that, those are conversations to be had.
Yeah.
Now, you know, so again, you control that you can say something. But I think a lot of people, because that feels uncomfortable, certainly it's uncomfortable, you know.
Sure.
But people can't read our mind.
No.
We believe people can see more of what we want than they do. It's called the illusion of transparency. It's really interesting how, you know, we just assume people know that, of course, I'm not happy, or I should have got the promotion, or I'm working too hard.
Yeah, it's like we all trick ourselves to think that we can read minds, but we just spend all the time trying to read our own mind, which is feeding us bullshit, and then we don't just pay attention to what other people are like saying or doing. So you have a mind reading device, you just have it pointed inward, and shuts you down.
Yeah. And so I think it seems easier to go through a job search or to go somewhere else
sure.
because that's a way you can feel like you're taking back control.
But what I
start to see happen, and we're starting to see glimmers of this, I wouldn't say it's enough for a trend, but what I'm worried about is that, so there are people in the Great Resignation in this time period that have made active conscious decisions about what they want to do. So like you didn't just throw your hands up in a, you know, frustration one day and say, enough of that. I'm going to go do this. You thought, you planned, you did the, you know, you evaluated.
And something
you,
I wanted to do something for myself, right. And it was the right.
Right.
It was the right time.
Right. So you made an active choice as opposed to making a defensive choice of like, well, I should just leave. Mm-hmm. And what I'm worried about is that people who haven't done that work or who get sort of lulled by the siren song of, oh, there's, you know, $10,000 more dollars over here or what have you. And it's great to build your wealth and your salary. And in 6 months, is the same issue that you're struggling with now going to come back?
Yeah, wherever you go, there you are.
Right. Yes. So that's one of the things I worry that what percentage of the great resignation will turn into the great regret?
Sure. And that's a great point.
And there is starting to be a little bit of a trend in boomerang hires, which is the someone leaves and then comes back to that company. And so I also think that for people, and this actually had been increasing a little bit prior to the pandemic, as I understand, but, you know, if you're not leaving without doing the work, you know, without understanding, okay, what are my values? You know, what are the, am I speaking up and asking for the things that I need here? Do I even know what I want?
Yeah.
And then what can I control to get more of that? Then I think if we're not doing that work ourselves, then it's all going to come back around no matter where we go there. As you said, there we are.
Well, and if you can start to understand your core values, that kind of the power that you have, you know, the value that you bring, you can start to, I think this is more of what I was trying to say before. And then because I think I have ADHD or something, I went in a different direction, but like, so part of it is by understanding these key aspects, knowing what value you bring, who you are, what you bring to the table, and how you can help people at your company, by looking at it through that lens first before looking at the I gotta get out of here lens, you can, yeah, it really does change the way that you look at the world, because you can start to assess what's actually important to you, what's going on in your company. Okay, have I decided that my boss is an idiot because I actually am a little bit insecure and I'm worried about this or XYZ? And if you can be honest with yourself about that, you may come to the conclusion, actually, no, my boss is really dumb. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. But if that's your first guess and the first thought is, let me just go get another job. If things are fine there, that, you know, it's not a good idea. Like, I wanted to do my own thing, right? I've always wanted to do my own thing. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I always wanted that freedom, that autonomy. I knew it was going to come with all of these fucking nightmare mm-hmm. things that come with it too. But it wasn't like a snap decision. I had to look at things like, okay, it's pretty good here, making good money, XYZ. Actually, I did have like one of those moments. So can you, I'll share mine after you, but can you share your like parking lot, your McDonald's parking lot story? Because when I read that, I was like, oh, I knew exactly where you were in that moment. I had a similar piece. Can you explain that?
Sure. So I always say that, you know, my career rescue started in a cold McDonald's parking lot. So I had just flown.
Say more.
I had just flown in from Atlanta, where I was living at the time, to a corporate leadership meeting in Chicago. And it was late at night. It was before Bluetooth, so that may be dating me. But, you know, I had checked my messages, and my boss, Suzanne, had been trying to reach me. But I had just gotten in the rental car, and it was cold and icy, and, you know, I'd lived in the South, so dry, you know, I needed two hands to drive. So I pulled into a Golden Arches to make the call because it was getting late, and I just didn't, you know, I wanted to know what was going on because I was going to see her the next morning at 8 a.m. So we got on the phone, and she told me that she was going to retire. And it was a complete surprise to me because it was probably maybe 10, 15 years before I thought she'd retire. But in the same breath, she told me that her job, which was the job that would have been the next logical job up for me, was going to somebody else. And, you know, we hung off the phone, you know, I still had a job. I was still valued, blah, 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 all that sort of thing. But I realized as I was just kind of sitting there processing and I was, you know, again, cold, my feet were cold, my hands were cold, that I was relieved.
Yeah.
And I realized I never really wanted that job, but I had assumed, of course, I should want that job, right? I would want that job because that was the path. That was the steps. And so in many ways, that night in that cold McDonald's parking lot, you know, led me to do some of the work to really think about what was next for me. If the next job up wasn't the job I was getting, what was I going to be doing?
Well, is there like a spiritual or religious aspect to this? Because you have the follow your whispers, and that is mm-hmm. very much kind of how I got to the point of leaving and starting this. Like, where do those whispers come from? Is that something that's you feel like is from you? Do you feel like it's like a God thing or a universe thing? What is that for you?
Yeah. So, you know, so for me, so I come from a Christian faith, but, you know, I would not say I'm any extreme or any type of, you know, that there's not any religious dogma, you know, in the book. But I do believe that we all have this heroic self inside us. And maybe, you know, for some, it may come from God. For some, it may be the person you are at your very best when you are feeling confident and calm. And I think Elizabeth Gilbert talks about it as the person who you wish you had always been, you know, like the best part of yourself. But the whispers are that other side to that judging brain, right?
Sure.
And what happens is that saboteur, that judging brain, you know, talks that down, that whisper that says, you know what, you could have your own business, or there's somebody out there who needs you. You know, that's a whisper that I really try to magnify because it's so easy to talk it down the other way, to say, you're just one of many. You know, there's 1,000 coaches. There's 1,000 podcast producers.
Exactly.
Who needs one more in the world?
Anybody can write a book. Anybody can do a podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So
why try?
Yeah, right. Right. So the listen to the whispers exercises are really about how you give that heroic voice, that your best self voice, more volume, and you actually go back to trusting it. You don't talk it down. You know, you actually use it to decide, okay, so what if this is kind of the whisper that I'm getting, it's time to start my own business, or it's time to ask for the raise or whatever, then what do I need to do?
Yeah.
What do I need to say? What could I think differently to get me closer to what that is? Because I find too that those kind of silent callings, those whispers, however you frame it, they want action. And if you don't give them action, then something's going to come up.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I've got no scientific proof on this, but I am convinced that, you know, that it causes illness, disease, distraction, you know.
Tons.
Yeah, that it's just the universe is smack upside the head.
Yeah, there's some things that you don't need science to prove when you have the experience in your own head, and you're like,
I like science. I like the research.
I love science. I love the research. But if there's an area that it doesn't go into, and you've got that experience, it doesn't matter. Somebody could say, "Oh, that's not God," or "That is God," or "That's science," or "That's not science." It doesn't matter. It's like those kind of things. It's real when you're there and you don't listen to those whispers. Mm-hmm. That's really like what happened to me. And I remember it, I was turning out of a Publix parking lot and making a U-turn.
Back to parking lots.
Yeah. And so, I got, I got an email that said, like, hey, here's your, like, commission payout for the month, right? And, you know, this was kind of more on my way out. I was trying to figure out how to, like, make the jump out. And I was, like, I don't know, 80% behind on my sales numbers for the month. So I wasn't doing too hot that month. And I get an email with a commission paycheck with, like, a $2,000 bonus on it. And I was way behind on my numbers. And I just remember looking at it and I heard, like, a voice, the universe, God, whoever it was like, you need to go. It's time to leave. And if you don't, I'm going to, like, bury you. Like, if you're going to sit here and take this money and you think that this is how you're going to operate and live your life like this, like,
because
you got another thing coming.
If I could unpack that, so let me make sure. So is this what's happening to you? So you knew you weren't operating at, like,
yes,
the best level to what that job is. You know, again, you were in a role that here was what success was measured at, and you knew you weren't hitting that. Maybe some of that you weren't hitting because you really didn't match your values anymore, didn't really care as much about it anymore.
Yeah.
But then you got rewarded, and it looked like it could be easy to stay stuck in that place where that it wasn't really working for you.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so to me, that is, you know, that's your heroic self saying, wait a minute, Chris, you're meant for something more. You're meant bigger. This would be really easy to get stuck in this.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, somebody else could say, cool, paid for stuff that I didn't do. You know, how wonderful is that? But that it could be the same incident. But, you know, again, we have to trust ourselves and trust the voices that come up for us, the messages that come up for us.
Yeah.
And this is where I also think we get trapped in, maybe, you know, some of it's in a social media world, or just, you know, the noise that we hear in the media. We get trapped in what we think we should want, as opposed to, you know, you knew, your body, your soul, your mind knew what you really wanted. And it wasn't to get, you know,
it's not to get
money for something you didn't feel great about doing.
Exactly. And part of it too is, I think more to your point that you mentioned earlier, it's not a screw you, I'm leaving type thing, because you can do that. You can stay at your job and do that. You can leave your job and do that. You can make that decision. It doesn't matter if you stay or go. You can make that decision, screw you, blah, blah, blah. But, like, part of what you mentioned before is, like, if you do all the things that you need to, that you're following those whispers as they come, that was a 6 months in the making type decision, because I realized, okay, this is not for me long term, but I'm a pretty important part of the team. Like, at that time when I decided I was going to leave, I was bringing in over $100,000 in revenue each month, which is, look, there's people's livelihoods that depend on it. There's people's jobs that depend on it. Because I was on that pace, they're going to hire more people that can come in. They can have families. They can have all these things that, okay, if I just say one day, like, nah, not interested, like, that can fall off. So during that time, it was planning of, okay, I have my friend who I helped get a job here. He is an experienced salesperson, but never really had the opportunity to do, like, this level of sales. Like, let me help him get trained up. Let me have him on all my calls. Let me have him, like, do my deals and stuff for me. I'll run, like, the big plays, but have him be on the field, like, doing that stuff. And by doing that, it was when that thing happened, I was like, okay, that's it. I've got basically 2 weeks or a month to finalize this thing, get this stuff squared away. I need to solidify what I'm doing next.
Right.
And I'm gonna lobby for him to take my job. That way it won't be like 100% replacement, but he can get there in a few months, versus you going and hiring somebody new who historically, like everybody else, just fails. And like, now I've given you this good person. You guys have to make that right decision. Mm-hmm. But like, if I was in a different space and I didn't have, you know, my dad is a entrepreneur and that stuff, and he's also out of his fucking mind. So, and genetically, I think I've inherited that. So, you know, if I didn't have that kind of predisposition to want to do things on my own, that it is possible that I could have done that in my own job and said, like, look, that didn't feel right. I've got this guy that can replace me. Let me do something else in the company. Like, when, by understanding more of the value I brought there, like, I could have gone to a different part of the company and tried to do something elsewhere. Like, it's almost the same thing, right?
Very much so. And so there's two things in what you said there. So I want to pull out. One is that we can make an active decision that, yes, it's time to leave, but we don't have to make, then we don't have to actually leave right away. Like, there are, you know, you can make a decision that's your decision. And one of the interesting things to me about, you know, the word decision, the root is actually based on a Latin word that means to cut. And I think sometimes what happens is that we think we've made a decision and then we waffle and then we're in what I call the swirl, right?
Have you read my mind?
You're a great case study. Yeah. But, see, stop talking about yourself like that. But once we can make a decision and then know that maybe there are some other things we have to put in place. So there's actually a lot of relief in making a decision. But what I think people get complicated, they say, if I have to make a decision, then I have to resign now. It's like, no, make a decision to pick the date. So I have several clients that as we work through this, we may make a decision like, okay, great, we've decided we're not going to try to work this situation to be better. Now, sometimes it's like, we're going to give it this time and here's the efforts we're going to, you know, do to make it better. So that's a different decision.
Because you don't know what the outcome will be.
Exactly. But there are some times where you've done the work and you make the decision. But you may give yourself the calendar saying, so the goal is, here's the 3 months or 6 months, you know, and that's when I'm leaving. But then that gives you the runway to do similar to what you did, to like, let me plan with that knowledge. Let me bank some cash if I'm going to go out on my own and just watch my money a little bit more, or sit down with a financial planner and really understand the implications of whatever, you know. So the decision and the action don't have to be smashed against each other.
Sure.
There's also the decision to say, it's like, you know, you were kind of modeling before, like, let's say you had recognized in that parking lot, it's like, I'm getting paid for something that I don't really feel like I'm excited about anymore. You know, let me make a decision that now's the time to find something else in the company that might excite me.
Sure.
And the mistake a lot of people make is that they wait for a job to be opened. They wait for a job to be posted. And in most cases, I mean, the job is only representative of pain or problem that needs to be solved. So a lot of times we haven't surfaced all the pain or the problems that need to be solved. But in someone like you,
that's a great point.
I mean, it's the same way when you're an independent consultant, like, go find the pain.
Yeah.
Go talk to people, go listen to what's happening and realize what things you bring to that, because you might be the kind of person that has a solution for it or has an idea. And as we said earlier, all jobs are all made up. Work is made up.
That is a great point. And you just mentioned, like, coming at it from a individual, like a contractor, right? Going and finding that pain when you're in. That is awesome. I just had like a bit of a revelation. So thank you, Darcy.
Well,
you're welcome. So it really is. If you can bring this kind of positive mindset and change the way you think and then you talk about yourself, you can get out of your own way. And if you take the almost like a mercenary approach or an individual contractor approach, you can start to look at things differently than the standard. This is my job. These are the jobs that are open. They don't have this job open, so that job doesn't exist. It's like this whole company was not a thing 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. This industry that this whole company is built on, the technology wasn't even thought of, or some guy at MIT wrote a paper on
it's
it that
all made up.
And if you can change the way you think about it, less rigid and a little bit more dynamic, take that step back, you can start to know where your value is, because you can go find a pain and solve it. You basically become your own company within a company.
Yeah. And, you know, and you know, you'd asked about my story before, and one of the ways that I got started in sort of the world of professional coaching was I actually entrepreneured. I actually, as I was doing that work and, you know, realized I wasn't getting the next traditional job up, but I loved where I was. I loved the people. When I went out and did interviewing and doing all that, it's just everything that came up felt just like, you know, I'd be in the same place six sure. months from now. So I made it up. I made up an internal coaching program, and it wasn't totally from scratch. I talked to other people at other companies. I was involved in professional associations to find examples of things, but it hadn't been yeah. done in my company. And, you know, you make the pitch, and if it got rejected, it would have got rejected, but I can't control that. All I was able to control was creating the idea, bringing it forward, and, you know, luckily it got accepted, and I was able to do that for a while. That really helped me bridge and understand more of what I wanted to do long term. So it was helpful for my company, and it was helpful for me. And I think there's a lot of those opportunities out there for people, but we get trapped in thinking, well, when someone needs me, they're going to come knock on my door. We wait to be picked instead of finding the ways where somebody out there needs us.
Yeah. Yeah. And putting yourself in that spot to be able to do it. And plus, and it really does. I'm glad you put it at the beginning of the book now that we're talking about it, because it's really all you can control is like what you do. What is it? What you do, what you say, and what you think.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
mm-hmm.
with that, I mean, let's say you put that program together and didn't get accepted. Well, part of it is twofold. You would have put something together that you put all this effort into. You would have thought through 50, 60% of it. You bring it to somebody, you're going to get feedback one way or the other. Mm-hmm. If you bring it and it's total shit mm-hmm. and nobody gives you anything, well, wow, I got to really reassess. But you can bring it to people and you get rejected, and then you know, okay, that doesn't either work for them or that doesn't work at all. But that doesn't mean it's a total failure.
It's just data.
It's just data.
It's just data. Yeah. You know, it's like anything in our life. And we do let a lot of outside influences affect us. And again, I'm not yep. trying to oversimplify this, because this is a learned skill over time. But
sure.
once we're aware that we can make that choice, then, or catch ourselves when we've made the choice to say, that meeting went awful, that means my career is over, I need to pack up and move to Montana. You know, I mean,
Ute, Montana.
Exactly. Which I understand a lot of people are moving to Montana these days. So, but, you know, to be able to catch ourselves and say, it's just data. I didn't get the job. It's just data.
Well, and it's a momentum forward. Mm-hmm. And like I was talking to, I won't say who it is, but she has a company. She does a certain service, but she's also realized that what she built is a very new and unique approach to her type of industry. You know, it's a very highly regulated industry, and it's very traditional. A lot of people do things really old school. Let me sell you this product. It's a product. Now, you're not consulting with people, and they're not doing it online. And she figured out a way to do it online and do it really well and turn it into a lead gen thing. And somebody came to her, another professional in her industry, and was like, can I hire you to show me how you did that? And she was like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. And she made the proposal and it fell through. But now she's got two other prospects lined up for this same thing. Mm-hmm. And now she's got data on why it didn't go through. And it ended up because they're just too busy. They have too many things going on. But that's something that you also have to now incorporate in your sales plan. Do you have the resources to do this? Do you have the personnel to do this?
Right.
Do you have the time?
Or how do I make sure that my pitch doesn't sound like it's going to be overwhelming, that it actually, you know, that I'm actually selling how this will save time in the long run or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all just data. But
and you start to feel who your ideal customers uh-huh. are and
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all
we,
just data.
We,
yeah.
yeah. And you know, we always will have rejection, but we tend to think rejection is so much about us and what we're doing. And even again, at work. So let's say that you take, you know, some of the advice in the book and you say, you know, maybe I need to ask for what I need more clearly at work. And you have that conversation and it doesn't go well. Well, all you can do is that you've been prepared and, you know, you're clear and then also consistent and following up and holding other people accountable for things that they agree to.
Sure.
But if it doesn't go there, then great. Okay, great. That's data. If, you know, if I make a request and show the data that it's time for me to move into the next pay band, and I'm told, oh, we'll have to consider it in 3 months when we do the pay review or whatever. If I'm not back at your door in 3 months or 2.5 months or to get ahead of it, right? I can control that. I can control keeping that conversation warm and keeping that going. And if at that time frame it's the decision is no or the decision is we don't know, that's just data. I get to do something with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
lots of interesting little, you know, tidbits here, but
this is very interesting. Yeah. So I appreciate you coming on and talking about this and carving out some time. I've been following the release of the book, and it seems like you've been working like a madwoman on this stuff. So appreciate you diving into some of this stuff. This has been extremely helpful, and a lot of times, this is not a knock on anybody, but you read some of these books, and it's like, okay, thank you for the same thing. And this was cool because it gives you something actionable. If you really sit down and work on this like a mini textbook almost, I would sit and read for 15 minutes, work on the exercise on two of the chapters, and just kept it moving forward. And it helped. It's changing the way I think about some of the stuff. And a lot of it ends up being reminders, because some of the stuff you innately know, but you don't know that you innately know it.
Right.
And it's so thank you for writing the book.
Well, you are welcome. And also, you know, to that point, I mean, we intentionally designed it. I intentionally wrote it to be used. Like we talked about at the top of our time, you know, I mean, it's so exciting to, you know, I think any author when their book is actually used and thought about and the work done with it, because so many times we download things or we listen to things and it's just candy, right? It's like, yeah, that's nice. But one of the things that we also put together at redcaperescue.com, you can sign up for a companion toolkit. And in that toolkit, there's, especially for people that get the book on Audible, there's a workbook with, you know, some of the exercises in it and some videos that kind of travel along with the different chapters. So they're kind of the snippet of, you know, some of the deeper work that you've done, but, you know, we wanted it to be active, wanted it to be a way that, that people could, you know, access the information and then keep going back to it.
Sure.
And really one of my big goals too is that people would want to share it with others. So want to, you know, talk about it, want to share an idea. And even one of the things we're working on is how to help leaders and managers use it with their people as to have a better career conversation, to be able to hand it to somebody and say, I want you to stay here. I want you to have the career you want here. Here are some tools and techniques, and maybe there's something in here that you want to try, and I'm in support of you, you know. So, because we often think some of these things, our leaders, they don't want us to ask for what they need, or they don't want us to, you know, create things out of chaos. But a lot of leaders I talk to, they do. They're dying for their people to speak up and tell them more, give them more data. We can't read each other's minds.
Well, and if you have something more like this that is more on an actual human level versus the standard, like, performance review, I knew when I worked at Enterprise, it's not anything bad against Enterprise, but they're a gargantuan company, and they can't do it off the cuff. They have to do it, like, rigid. And it's just like, I know that this performance review is going to be some boilerplate nonsense, and really this is a way for HR to prevent themselves from getting sued. And I appreciate that, because there's a lot of people that are scumbags that want to go after them for $1 million because a manager said that you didn't work hard. Well, it hurt my feelings, and I feel like my feelings are worth $1.2 million. So, like, I get these things, but if you're working at a company and you really need more dynamic interaction with your people, rather than sending them like a stupid survey, give them something like this. I'm going to do a shameless plug for you, okay? Because this is, if you have a team that you feel is waffling or is maybe on the brink, or you just want to bring them to the next level, like, take this approach. Stop doing the stupid performance reviews. I got a performance review, and guess what? I left the company 3 months later. That was a different company, not my last company. It's like, okay, is the writing on the wall, or are you giving me a real path out? And I think that's what I appreciated more about this than some of the other stuff that you read in this space. It's not just fluff bullshit. It was an actual real plan forward. So I appreciate the legitness.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the fact that that's how it communicated to you, and that's certainly the intent. And again, you know, I created it, wrote it, you know, we promote it from the perspective of somebody out there needs us. So yeah. Somebody out there needs me, somebody needs these ideas. So if it can resonate with one other person, then
hell,
that
yeah,
makes me seriously happy. And, you know, I hope everybody passes it on to the next person.
Cool. I'm putting out a podcast about it,
okay,
so I'm hoping
you.
This goes
pass
out to a bunch of people. But Darcy, before we wrap up, where can people find you, follow you, connect with you, to work with you? Yeah.
My home base is redcaperevolution.com.
Cool.
And there you can sign up to be on my insider community, which is my free, it's an email, but it's like a little love note every week. It's just kind of a way to keep in touch. And there's usually a story and a tip or a strategy. And that's the place that I share tools and other programs and things that we're doing first. So, but redcaperevolution.com is the place to start.
Cool. Awesome. And I'll include some of this stuff in the show notes so that way people can find you. But again, Darcy, thank you very much for coming and doing this. I appreciate it. This is awesome.
Thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.